Can you come again, Mr. Prabhakar, sir?
Yes,
no objection. No objection from my side, sir.
Okay, thank you so much. We are swapping 3 and 4. 4 becomes 3, 3 becomes 4.
In other words,
we start with the public entities because their presentation is shorter as compared to that of the department. There's no objection to that. Right. We do this in the hope that the entities are in the meeting. Let me just check if the advisory council is in the meeting. Can I check that? DM, sorry, who's DG?
Chair, the advisory council is in the meeting. Yes.
The advisory council is in the meeting. Thank you very much. And then from the advisory council, we then move to appeals board and then the department. All right, so that's how we're going to this is the order of the meeting. Now, colleagues, let me just go back to the first item. You are all welcome. Thank you very much. I've welcome you, Director General, and the chair of the advisory council, Miss Jennifer Schreiner, and other members of the council, and of course the staff from the Department of Defense. Deputy Minister, good morning to you, sir.
Morning to Chair and morning, morning to members.
Thank you, DG. DM.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you very much, DM. DM, we've reordered the items. We'll start with the entities. So with Advisory Council being the first, and then the appeals and the appeals board, and then we take the presentation from the department as the last presentation. I hope that is in order, DM.
That's perfectly in order, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. So that the colleagues from the public entities will have an early Christmas. All right. Apologies. Can we deal with the apologies? Brian?
Chair, we have an apology from the minister who is abroad. In fact, she is in Namibia on official business. We also have an apology from General Olomisa. Those are all the apologies, Chair.
Those are the only apologies. And DG, are there any apologies on your side?
Morning, Chairperson, and morning to the members. From our side, the members that have to do the presentation are in the meeting, Chairperson. No apologies. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. All right. Advisory Council, do you have to pass any apology today? Jennifer, Ms. Schreiner?
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much. Indeed, there are only 4 of us that are able to attend the meeting. The Advisory Council are part-time responsible for the Council, and so the rest of the members are not able to join us. Some will be able to join us later, but given the reordering, they may well be getting a complete Christmas instead of an early Christmas. thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, colleagues, thank you very much. And so we will start with the presentations. But before that, the DM, I now invite you to, maybe it's an opportunity, DM, to also introduce the members of the Advisory Council to the committee. We're meeting them for the first time. I understand they were appointed in March this year to replace the board that was there, the council that was there before we came into office in 2019. Over to you, DM. I would request all the colleagues to switch on their videos when they do the presentation or they speak. Thank you very much. DM, over to you.
I'm trying, Chair, to put on my camera. It's not responding. It says unable to access camera. I'm not sure what could be the reason, but I'll keep on trying.
You may go ahead.
Honorable members, Chair, through you, the Military Veterans Advisory Council, as the chair has indicated, was indeed reconstituted upon the expiry of the term of office of the previous team, and the inaugural meeting of the Advisory Council was convened in April, and the Council, whilst it struggled with the logistics to get on with its business, it has pleasantly commenced its work. The Council is constituted by the following members: Ms. Jenny Schreiner, who's the chair of the Advisory Council, Mr. Dan Hato, Ms. Magata, Ms. Muema, Mr. Musala, Ms. Ramasodi, Mr. Siolo, Lieutenant General retired Rasekhatla, Mr. Tibeda, and Ms. Tondana. They are the members of our Advisory Council. I must say that from the Ministry, honorable members, we are quite happy that we have this team of very capable persons to advise the minister, and behind them they have a very impressive record of exposure to public affairs and public policy as far as government priorities are concerned, because the majority of them have actually had the privilege of serving in government and at high level, some of them as DGs and DDGs. And we think their expertise will come in handy in the making the minister's responsibility over the military veterans much, much easier. Without further ado, honorable members, I would invite the chair of the Advisory Council to take you through the issues. What I can say, of course, is that the Advisory Council's mandate and its terms of reference is not a subject that is new to the committee, because it has been previously presented in the old during the term of the old advisory council. So honorable members are very are familiar with the terms of reference and the mandate of the Advisory Council. Of course, there are issues that we discussed the last time the work of the Advisory Council with the Oversight Committee, which we flagged for ongoing, discussion with the view of reviewing the framework in some areas in relation to how the Council is positioned. But with that said, I'll invite the chair of the council to come in. Ms. Jenny Schreiner.
Thank you very much, DM.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Deputy Minister, for that introduction. Could our presentation be screened to the shared on the screen so that I can talk through it?
You mean our committee secretary must do it?
If you want me to do it, I can do it.
You can, Brian. How do you like it?
She can do it. I've given her the right to do so.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you so much, Brian.
Chair, if you can just then give me a minute to open the presentation. My apologies, Chair. I was not expecting to be screen sharing, but there we are. I'm getting to the presentation format. Chair, my apologies. This is really throwing me. Right, Chair. My apologies for all of that. I wasn't expecting to be screen sharing myself, but that's absolutely fine. Chair, with the background of the Deputy Minister's introduction, some of the first slides of the presentation will be already covered, but this is what we intend to present to you. The purpose of the Advisory Council, our mandate, our membership, our strategic planning session, the inaugural meeting, presentation on SUNVA and the way forward, issues around the amendment bill that we've considered or begun to consider, the terms of reference of the Advisory Council, the establishment of our subcommittees, and finally the framework within which the Council is remunerated that you may already be aware of. So the Advisory Council is responsible to the Minister in terms of performing the functions of the Act as identified in Section 10.1. The, the responsibilities there are to advise the Minister in terms of policy matters on anything relating to military veterans. It also enables us to have issues referred to us by the Director General or the Minister, but in the same instance, for us to be able to lift up issues that we feel need to be considered and advise the Minister in that regard. So our mandate comes directly from the Military Veterans Act, and it is intended to provide policy application and regulation support to the Minister in relation to any matters relating to military veterans and their dependents. The Advisory Council, the Minister has already spoken to this. My apologies that the department seems to want to rename or reinitial me, but there you have the names that the Deputy Minister had referred to, and I concur that the experience both in terms of our expertise in government and in the private sector, and in terms of our security background, you have a team of people here that is going to be able to, over the 5 years of our term of office, provide good policy support to the minister and through the minister to the department. And we do look forward to being able to engage with the portfolio committee and be guided by you in terms of where our energy should be directed, obviously in relation to our responsibility to take that guidance ultimately from the minister. The Act also provides for the DG to be a ex officio member of the Advisory Council, or to delegate a member to serve as an ex officio member of the Military Advisory Council, and that is an aspect that we do think needs to be firmed up somewhat. As the Deputy Minister had indicated, we had our inaugural meeting, having been appointed in March. We had our inaugural meeting on the 26th of April, and the Deputy Minister, on behalf of the Minister who was unavailable due to cabinet responsibilities, explained, introduced the department since its founding in 2009, explained our terms of office, what was expected from the Council, unpacked the roles and responsibilities, and reflected to us that we are advisors to the Minister in relation to policy matters relating to the department and the military veterans. In that process, we also then reflected on the lines of communication, an aspect that perhaps needs some refinement in the Act, but ensured that we would communicate advice via the ministry so that we do not land up where there is a cross-cutting relationship between the Advisory Council and the department, and the Advisory Council and the minister, respecting that the minister is, as executive authority, my apologies, fully responsible for the policy guidance and strategic guidance of the department, and our role is to support her in that regard. We then requested a strategic planning session to take the guidance that had been given by the Deputy Minister into a strategic session that would enable us to then look at our work plan. Unfortunately, it was somewhat delayed, but it did take place on the 7th of July. It was then not able in that, what ultimately ended up as a half day, to conclude all of those matters. So it also then informed our August meeting and our September meeting, so that we were able to get presentations on matters that were not necessarily available on the 7th of July. And I'll return then to our draft work plan, which we have not included in the presentation because it is still subject to consideration at our next meeting in December. But we will then make it available once it has been submitted to the minister, and can then share that. But effectively, we are taking the responsibility to ensure that we have at least quarterly interaction with the minister, so that we are able to engage with the minister on the work that we are doing, but also receive guidance from the minister on the work that we are doing. We have identified the need for us to look very seriously at the policies that are being developed in the department, particularly in relation to the 11 benefits that are defined in the Act. We have identified the importance of looking at the department's stakeholder database and ensuring that there is a stakeholder management program that is appropriate to the work of the department and appropriate to the implementation of the policy and strategic plan of the department. We have identified the importance of looking at legislative and policy amendments as another aspect of our work. And finally, we have identified the importance of monitoring without in any sense encroaching on the minister's responsibility to oversee the performance of the department and the portfolio committee's responsibility to oversee that, but particularly in relation to the achievement of policy objectives, to look at the implementation, the performance of the department and the capacity of the department in order to be able to make recommendations about how those aspects could be improved. So our work plan is still work in progress, but it is certainly on the move. We also, as part of that strategic planning session, took a presentation on the situation with SANVA, concerned, as the ministry is equally concerned and the department is equally concerned, with the hiatus between the end of the term of the SANVA elected leadership and the challenge of then getting it back into a standing process. So we did get resolutions that had been made in relation to the workshop and the unfolding process in relation to that. There were particular concerns that we had raised, one being that we clarified that the constitution of SANVA is a process that can only be amended through the conference of SANVA. So while in the workshop and the engagement that the department has been involved in, discussions around the constitution can take place, the actual amending of it can only happen in the conference. We were concerned about whether the SANVA trust had been adequately considered in this process. We were concerned about the access to SANVA information that appeared to be a challenge, and some it was shared with the department that SANVA records should be available to the department given the relationship that had existed during the 5-year period of SANVA. This is again ongoing work, so one of our committees has been tasked to engage further on the progress with the roadmap that had been presented to us by the department to get a further update and to consider any further issues that need to be addressed in relation to that. On the amendment bill, this was presented to us in our September meeting. We noted that inputs from the former advisory council and the appeal board had been consolidated and submitted to the department for consideration. We had some recommendations in terms of the roadmap, the process of the amendment bill, particularly in relation to suggest how the timelines of it could be somewhat shortened by ensuring that there was adequate consultation with other departments that are impacted on by the Act in deliberately convened sessions to focus on the bill rather than waiting for the DG cluster process as the mechanism for the consultation. This is an area of work that continues to be taken forward by our subcommittee on policy and legislation, and so there will be ongoing work in relation to it. I think what we had also reflected, and obviously the department and the ministry have also been aware of this, is that the original mapping out of that process had not necessarily been well advised, and the contribution by the state law advisors in terms of the process has significantly assisted in ensuring that there is a very clear policy framework that informs the amendment of the actual legislation. We have also considered the terms of reference. This was one of the issues that the Deputy Minister had raised with us in the inaugural meeting. The terms of reference had been drafted by the previous advisory council, but it was referred to us to consider whether they were appropriate, whether they needed to be amended in any kind of way, and to then ensure that we dealt with that process. So we have dealt with the terms of reference, considered it very carefully against the Act, which is where our mandate comes from. So we are ensuring that the draft terms of reference, which are now ready for submission to the Minister, are absolutely consistent with the Act. We have clarified some of the wording of it to ensure that it is more appropriate. There was a need for some extensive cleanup in terms of the sequencing and repetition in the Act, in the terms of reference, that could then lead to some misinterpretation. We have also clarified the responsibilities of the secretariat, and we hope that that will lead to a far more efficient management of the support to the advisory council, much as at the moment the support to the advisory council is also support to the appeals board, something that needs to be addressed going forward. But those terms of reference are now at the point at which they can be submitted to the ministry. In terms of the terms of reference, the previous council had operated on the basis of three subcommittees, and we have agreed that those three subcommittees, in terms of the responsibilities of the advisory council in the Act, are highly appropriate. The one is a committee looking at the benefits. The second is looking at policy and legislation. And the third is looking at the stakeholders. The slide then indicates the chair people of each of those committees of the council, and those committees will then report into the advisory council. The advisory council has agreed to meet on a monthly basis in a 3-hour virtual meeting. The committees are expected to meet in between those meetings so that they are able to then report into the advisory committee. And so that will also improve our ability to process matters and be able to then firm up recommendations at advisory council level and submit them timely to the minister for her consideration and onwards referral if she should agree with the advice that we would be giving to her. Chairperson, this last slide then deals just with the remuneration framework, just as the portfolio committee is not already briefed, is aware of the fact that the Act determines the remuneration determined by the Minister in consultation with the Minister of Finance. And according to the determination that has been made by Treasury, the Council has been classified as a category C2, and as such, there are predetermined rates that are scheduled, and when we were appointed, we were all appointed with that very clearly stated. And so that is a very clear issue that is resolved for us. The only issue that is a supplementary issue, and that one that we are working on with the department, is the issue of tools of trade. It's been a bit of a slower process than we would have wanted, but we are working with the department to ensure that is unblocked. It becomes particularly important in terms of virtual meetings to ensure that we are appropriately equipped to be able to function effectively as a council and as the committees. We have members who are located in the Eastern Cape. We have members located in the Western Cape. We have members who periodically are, because of their other work responsibilities, out of the province that they live in. And so the process of being able to meet virtually becomes a very strong enabler of our work. Chair, in concluding then, just to echo what the Deputy Minister has said, the process of getting us up and running and functioning has been a bit slower than one would have hoped, but we are now moving forward. We do have work in progress. We are addressing the teething problems as we move forward. We have an enormously experienced and committed council, and I do anticipate that over the 5 years we will be able to work with the ministry, with the department, and with the portfolio committee to ensure that we are able to advise the minister appropriately and be able to take forward the service that government needs to be providing to the military veterans of this country. Thank you, Honourable Chair and members.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schreiner, for the presentation. And colleagues, the matter is on the table now. I have a request to make to both the ministry, in particular the deputy minister. and yourselves, the advisory council, that we, as a committee, we have not evaluated the performance of these benefits in relation to the appropriateness and the appropriateness and their effectiveness. I don't know when they were first introduced, but I know the Act was passed in 2011 and now is 2022, it's 11 years later. Yeah, I think it's a matter that we need to look into. Maybe it will also assist us when we review the legislation. And so maybe you are in office now, and that you can start looking at these matters. It may not be your matter. It may not be the matter that the minister is asking you to, or maybe asking you to look at. But I think with the minister's agreement or concurrence on this one, I'm sure it's a matter that can be looked at. And they will not be against you looking into it. So, but the DM will comment when his time comes. For example, there is a transport benefit. I don't know its appropriateness in our situation. Maybe in another country where public transport, you know, is coordinated somewhat. I mean, the public transport system is, you know, coordinated and you know maybe in that situation you can say yes, it is easy, it's achievable. But in our case where we have fragmentation, you know, there's very little accountability, it really may be difficult to really give effect to that benefit, unless you give people transport, you know, military veterans transport subsidies, which I don't think is what the legislation was actually envisaging. That's maybe, it may not be the only benefit that requires review. So basically I'm calling for a review that it be conducted on all benefits, and also look at whether the quantum we are providing for each of those benefits, and there is housing, is it really will it really give us make us realize the objective, you know, with dignity, this, that, and the other. Education, I know at some point education, you know, the money we give give out for basic education, I think it was 40,000 rand, got reduced to 20,000 rand, and then we went back to 40,000 rand. So it becomes just an element of an exercise of discretion on the part of the people in office. what informed the decision to bring it down to 20,000 rand and then bring it up to 40,000 rand, we did not know. The bursary we give to students in higher education, is it sufficient, or we need also to reconsider it and so on? And how is that how is the decision made that we pay this much for this one and that much for the other, and so on and so forth? And then thirdly, there was an issue of you know, what you call means test. The law is very strict on means test, and I'm not quite certain if we should maintain means test and going forward. And also the issue of health. Right now, the department is responsible for health care support only for the military veterans and not their immediate family members. You are involved in a car accident with your spouse, and but you'll be taken to different hospitals. One would be obviously to a private hospital because has you know, healthcare support, you know, and your spouse to a public hospital because he doesn't receive the same support as yourself. It may extend to the children as well. So I'm saying these are issues that we need to look at, and in the context, of course, on the available envelope resources of the state. I would want to add it at that, but you will comment and the DM will comment on this issue. And then can I take hands, colleagues? Do I see hands? I'm sorry, I was too long on this one, but I thought I should raise it because it's a matter that has preoccupied the committee on a number of for several on a number of times. Mr. Shelembe, Madiake Shelembe.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Though I was troubled by the network, my network was not good. I couldn't get much. But Chair, just for clarity, I know that well, in terms of the Military Veterans Act, the advisory council is like coming to advise, I mean, the minister. Now, from 2011, I mean, having these advisory councils to the minister, why, I mean, we are still talking about the problems that are being faced by the military veterans, whereas, I mean, we have that body to assist that the minister, I mean, is, I mean, you know, getting things done. As we are correctly saying that now, there are some communities of military veterans that has not been rolled out. I know that the matter is with the deputy president or the presidential task team, but my concern, having that board in place, so there is a lack of communication between the minister and the body, because if there is, I think these problems would have been picked up long time, and I think, I mean, from 2011 to date, I'm just checking now, I mean, about, I mean, the body itself, that how, I mean, often, I mean, they raise issues or they will be raising issues in the near future, and how do they foresee the immediate, I mean, rolling out of these benefits, I mean, to the military veterans. And I'm checking, Chairperson, whether, I mean, we as, I mean, members of parliament, do we have, I mean, the right, I mean, to check something directly to them? Because I'm trying to avoid the issue, maybe, or saying maybe we are not following the protocols. That should, I need something that I think the body may have that information. Do I have the right, I mean, to communicate with them? If not, it's fine. The Chairperson will give direction that what do we do? I'm asking that chairperson because you remember last time, you know, I tried to get information for military veterans from, the PC. And I think it was June, on the 3rd of June this year. But to say to you, up until today, I have not received, a response, even in that meeting where, I raised the issue. Know that the committee was concerned that we should be guided now that we do not communicate or do anything with, the Director General. So now I'm checking now, Chair, that we haven't got advisory body. I don't have to be like in a similar situation where I'm taken as if not fearing with them. But it was, and the committee was that the member applied in 2019 to date has not received the response. And instead, members said now they were concerned about why, I communicated, with the Director General. And that day, the DG said, will engage me after the meeting. But to date, has never engaged me. So I thought maybe I was wrong, to engage. I'll therefore request maybe, if the deputy minister in this meeting, something that I think is relevant, maybe he may have information because I don't know who to ask. A member has asked me that yesterday,
Mr. Shelembe, we are dealing with the advisory council. They are appointed solely to advise the minister. They have no line to the department.
No, Chairperson, if you can get me clearly, I'm saying if the deputy minister is here, will also assist me in that question. I'm not asking directly now to the advisory council, the one I'm asking now. So take my point as is. So Chair, what I'm asking, if the deputy has an answer, will assist me. They say, there is announcement that has been made that, the rolling out of the pension will begin in December. So, and I don't want, to give the wrong information.
Mr. Shelembe, can you hold on that question? I will grant you the opportunity to raise it when we deal with the department. Can you finish off with the advisory council for now?
Okay, no, fine. No, thank you, Chair.
Yes, you will get the opportunity. I'm sorry that I've just interfered with your line of questioning, Mr. Shalem. And any other questions, colleagues?
No problem. Nope.
Thank you so much. All right, colleagues. I think we are done. I will invite you, Ms. Schreiner, to make your own comment after. And after the DM will come, after that we'll then move to the appeals board and then the department.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much for the guidance. And we will certainly take on board the issue of doing a holistic evaluation in relation to the performance of the benefits. Our benefits committee has already started considering some of the aspects of it. And I think you've given us a very clear direction going forward. And indeed, the linkages between the appropriateness and effectiveness of the implementation of benefits and the policy and legislation amendments is a very important interface. So I'm sure we will take that on board. I will raise that in our next meeting, and it can help to guide both the Benefits Committee and the Policy and Legislation Committee. So from my side, I think that is a clear response. I'm sure the DM will respond in relation to the issue that has been raised around communication channels, but we certainly are operating on the basis, Honourable Chair, as you have indicated, that the law defines us as a policy advisory committee to make recommendations and support the minister. And we have We have been in a situation in which people have approached us on purely operational matters, and my response on those is to refer them to the ministry, for the ministry to refer them to the department, which is responsible for the operational implementation. And that will be the way that we will continue to operate, so that we are able to ensure that we don't overstep our mandate, and we ensure that we function entirely within the law, and in that sense are a cog in the mechanism that can enable the delivery. The council is concerned about the pace at which things are being rolled out, and we will do what we can to ensure that we are able to provide support that can enable those processes and ensure that the implementation is also done in full compliance with the law, the system of government, and that we do not land up where processes get snarled up in unnecessary litigation because policy and legislation has not been fully complied with. That is our role to assist, and I think we are well positioned to be able to do the best that we can in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ms. Reiner. DM, your concluding remark on this presentation. Over to you, sir.
Honorable Chair and members, honorable members, thank you for the observations registered by the committee chair. If I may just say that in relation to the point you have raised about the need for us to consider a review of the military veterans' benefits, I think it's a valid and a legitimate suggestion. Let me just say in relation to that we must remind the oversight committee that ideally it was the view of the ministry that a white paper on military veterans, much as it is now a long time from where we took off from in 2011, it would assist nonetheless that the Department of Military Veterans, in improving its efficiency, we go through what all departments have, a policy which is put out to the public for discussion, and on the basis of which the legislation governing how the department must work and what it must do can then be reviewed. The policy we have was crafted as an interim policy. There was no white paper that was prepared when this department was put in place. There was no white paper on military veterans. An interim policy was put in place with the view of operationalizing the department immediately. However, there was always an understanding that a white paper, an opportunity for the public to discuss what government must do for military veterans, will be sponsored. So in relation to the review of the benefits, I see that as relevant to that question of checking whether the benefits are appropriate themselves from a policy point of view. From the policy point of view, are the things that we saying we must do for military veterans appropriate? Are they correct? Are they the best? Or we should be doing other things, not what we are doing now. But also a review can also be looked into by the advisory council upon tasking by the minister to look at the efficiency with which the benefits have been rolled out, meaning to look at the machinery of the Department of Military Veterans itself. Because the advisory council is not an inspectoral body. It doesn't inspect the functioning of the Department of Military Veterans, but it may still well be that the minister may want to use the advisory council to advise her about the efficiency or the shortcomings in the machinery's operation itself in delivering the benefits. So I do agree that what you are raising, Chair, it's a legitimate, you know, point, that a review of these benefits from the point of view of policy, their appropriateness, but also from the point of view of the efficiency with which government is providing these benefits to military veterans can also be, you know, looked into in that way. I think it's a matter which we will share with the minister as a sentiment the oversight committee has raised for consideration. Chair, with that said, I submit.
Thank you very much. That would be our conclusion, DM and the chair of the advisory council. We'll communicate officially. We'll send our communication to the minister with a request that you be tasked to look at the appropriateness, effectiveness, and the delivery efficiency of the benefits. I'm sure we can then end on that note. We hope that that process will be expedited. As I said, I take it as part of the process of amending legislation as well as, of course, regulations. So thank you very much, and until we will meet again, thank you very much, DM, on this one. Thanks, Ms. Shona. Your team is now free to leave the platform at any time it wishes so. You want to say something before you leave? You are mute. You please. No, unmute yourself.
I'm fine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We can
You are muted, sir.
Thank you very much. We can then move to the next item, the appeals board. DG, who is going to take us through that one?
Good day, Chairperson. Good day to the members. We do have Mr. Siango to take us through
that one.
Yes, Chairperson.
Yeah.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to the members of the Portfolio Committee, and good morning to the Deputy Minister and the officials in the meeting. This is the briefing in terms of the progress that the department has done in terms of the appointment of the appeals board, which the term expired just move the slides. Okay. Which the term has expired with the previous appeals board members. Basically, as a background, Chairperson, the Section 21 of the Military Veterans Act defines, or establishes the appeals board, and it defines then how the appeal board must be appointed, and it is the responsibility of the minister to actually ensure that the appeals board is put in place, and it consists of three members. Also in Section 21, it also indicates then the kind of expertise that are required to be appointed in the appeals board, and it's very specific I think in bullet C, to the extent that one of the members of the appeals board must be a member, must be an advocate or an attorney that has got at least 10 years experience in terms of practicing law. I think it's because of the nature of the work that the appeals board deals with in terms of ensuring that there is fairness in the decisions that the department is making on dispersing or on deciding on military veterans affairs. Then the board consists of five members, and they get appointed over a period of 5 years. As I indicated, the role of the board is to consider any appeals lodged by military veterans against any decision taken by an official of the Department of Military Veterans in terms of the act, which adversely affects the rights of the military veteran. And then also the role also of the board is also advising the minister or the DG on any question of law relating to military veterans affairs, and it also advises the minister on any legal matters regarding the military veterans affairs. This is also stipulated in the Military Veterans Act 18 of 2011. Then what has happened so far, the previous board members were appointed in 2015 for a period of 5 years, which expired. Minister then extended the board members' term to the 31st of December 2021. Following that, then the minister gave an instruction that the department must then advertise and ensure that new appeal board members are appointed. So far, the 12 nominees have been received, and there's been engagement between the department and the ministry regarding that list, to the extent that the revised, there's been several engagements. The revised or the last, submission that was made to the ministry following engagements has been on the 25th of November, so that then the minister then can assist to appoint then the board members. So that's where we are, Chairperson and members, is that the nominations have been cleaned up, and then have been submitted for further consideration by the ministry. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Any indication when we're likely to have the board appointed, DG?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We do have Mr. Makonza.
I don't think Makonza would be able to answer the question. I'm checking if you do have an indication of when the board will be finally appointed. You don't have that indication, is it?
We do not have at the present moment, Chair, because the documents have been sent to the ministry.
Let's leave it at that. You don't have any indication at the moment. All right.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, are there any comments? Any comments, colleagues? Okay. No comment. DM, are you in a position to answer the question so that we can move forward?
Chair, the process around the reconstitution of the appeals board is a puzzling matter because, as you will see from the presentation shared, the brief presentation shared, the appeals board, the last appeals board's term of office was extended by the ministry to the 31st of December 2021, the end of last year. And that decision was taken in early 2021, and the reason was because of the COVID pandemic. And we felt that we should allow the then board to continue until the end of last year. Actually, now my recollection is that that decision was taken much earlier at the setting in of the COVID pandemic, when we extended the terms of office of these entities. We have been very much alive to the fact that by December last year, the 31st, we should have had a new board, appeals board. We're very conscious of that, and we reminded the department to put out the necessary advert to get applications to be made for us to establish the new board. But as you can see, that only happened in May this year, 5 months after that board's term of office had come to an end. What I can say in relation to that is that indeed a submission was made to the ministry. My office is aware of that submission. That memo came to my office, and we have dealt with that memo in June. And my office indicated it's you on the candidates that were raised or were included in the memo, and it was forwarded. The reason why we do not have an appeals board as we speak now, unfortunately, I'm unable to share any light around that, because as I'm saying, the matter was dealt with in June, as in accordance to this report, the presentation. I know and I remember the names of the candidates that my office recommended for purposes of the minister's endorsement or concurrence or amendments and implementation. Why it has not been implemented, I do not know. The point that there has been a
resubmission of the same matter or product to the ministry. I would not understand why there is a resubmission, because everything was done properly. The names were there. It was only for the ministry to decide on what improvement to the names that were there could be made, and the establishment of the appeals board be proceeded with. The nominations that have been resubmitted, I do not understand the grounds on which that has been done. So all we need to do is to establish what happened with the proposals that were submitted in June, and which my office, responded to and endorsed the names, and even proposed who should be the chair of the team. That's all I can say at this point. It's something that we need to get information about to take this matter forward, Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you.
So, no. Thank you very much. I think the response is straightforward. The submission was considered and recommendations made, and all you are awaiting is the final decision on the matter, which final decision rests with the minister. All right, so we want to leave it at that, because in your input you are saying that there was no need to even make a submission, because the matter had already been escalated to the level of the minister, and you were all awaiting her decision in that regard. Can we impress upon you, DM, that you talked to the minister that were not happy that the matter has again delayed, that up to this date we still not have an appeals board, that is 12 months later. There's no appeals board in office. We stand in violation of legislation that makes it a requirement that there be an appeals board, because it plays a key role, a critical role in the decision making process. Can we leave that with you, DM?
Most certainly, Honorable Chair, I will do that. I'll follow up this matter with the minister to establish what happened to the execution of the decision.
And thank you very much. And if you could just communicate back to us in writing within the next 2 weeks, can we? Is that in order? In writing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, okay, we'll want to leave it at that for now, and then move to the third presentation. We're now on item number 4. Item number 4 was item number 3. For those who were not in the meeting when we approved the amendment to the meeting. I don't see you, DG. Are you going to flight the presentation or what?
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. We do have Mr. Makonza to take us through. the presentation as per the request. Mr. Makonza, are you struggling with the presentation? I think we have it on board, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Greetings to the Honorable Chair, the Deputy Minister, and the Honorable Members. So my presentation will be talking to the Human Resource Plan with the special focus on the suspension processes, retention strategy, and the succession planning. This slide, Chairperson, it just giving you the topics that will be covered in the presentation, which is the purpose, the suspension processes, the departmental capacity, the progress on filling of SMS vacancies, the age analysis, current status, and the employment equity targets versus the current status at SMS level, the outcome of the analysis based on the economic active population, the retention strategy, and the succession planning. The purpose of the presentation, Chair, is to give an overview on the Department of Military Veterans Human Resource Plan on suspension processes, retention strategy, and the succession planning. Starting with the suspension process, Chair. Firstly, the department will receive the allegations of misconduct, and that can be through the whistleblowers or the audit findings. And upon the assessment of the allegations, a decision is made to implement the precautionary suspension as guided by Chapter 7 of the SMS Handbook, that is for SMS members, and PSCPC Resolution 1 of 2003, and that is for levels 1 up to level 12. Then the next step will be then the notice of intention to suspend. It will have to be served affording the alleged employees to indicate as to why they should not be suspended. And the Office of the State Attorney may be approached to source forensic investigations based on the complexity of the allegations. Then the chairpersons and initiators will have to be appointed through the DPSA database. Then the reasons, Chair, for suspension is it is if the employee is alleged to have committed a serious misconduct or offense, or if the employer believes that the presence of an employee at the workplace might jeopardize any investigation into the alleged misconduct or endanger the well-being or safety of any person or the state. A suspension of this kind is a precautionary measure that does not constitute a judgment. Hence, it must be on a full salary. And if an employee is suspended or transferred as a precautionary measure, the employer must hold a disciplinary hearing within 60 days. But that is depending on the complexity of the matter and the length of the investigation. Then the chair of the hearing must then decide on any further postponements. The employer will therefore monitor that the disciplinary processes must take place within the prescribed time frames. So all of the above chairperson processes that were mentioned is then provided by Schedule 8 on the Code of Good Practice on Dismissals of the Labor Relations Act 66 of 1995 as amended. I will now, Chair, give you the progress. I'll give you the progress on the four cases of the SMS members that were suspended by the department in August 2021. The investigations were concluded between February and March 2022, and the four SMS members were issued with charge sheets, which means that they were then formally charged. And then the presiding officers and initiators for the disciplinary processes were then appointed, and disciplinary proceedings then began, and they are currently on a continuous basis. And Chair, I can confirm that the cases are all four cases are now on the road, which means that they are continuing. However, there were some cancellations that were realized due to some ill health that were raised by the church employees. And then the presiding officers and initiators, they were instructed by the department to expedite the disciplinary processes. And also the department managed to secure witnesses which those that the department, as well as those that are not the employees of the department. And I can confirm, Chairperson, today that some of these witnesses, they have been on the witness stand to give their testimonies. So Chairperson, the commitment that was reached between the initiators and the chairpersons of the matters with the department is that all these four cases must be finalized before 31 March of 2023, which is the end of the financial year. Okay. Chair, on this slide, I'm just giving you the picture of the departmental capacity, of which the on the you will notice that I'm giving you also, I've given you figures here as per the program in column in the first column, and then on the second column I've given you here the total number of the posts that are approved on the structure, which is 169 posts. And then out of these 169, the number of filled permanent positions is 130. And then, Chair, the department has 48 warm bodies that are on contract. Which means these 48 employees, they do not form part of the structure, but these are the posts that are additional to the structure. And this has been happening. This contract has been renewed since from 2014. Then the next column is for the vacant funded posts, which are 23. And then when you add the 48 contract positions with the 130 permanent positions that are filled, you get 178 posts. So that means that the current staff complement is 178 that is active in the department. Okay, this slide, Chair, I'm giving you the progress in the filling SMS positions that are vacant, that are currently vacant in the establishment. We have a chair, two DDG positions, that is corporate services and the socio-economic support services. Those posts were advertised in January 2022, and the adverts they closed in end of February in 2022, and then the department did all the pre-screenings, and the master list was finalized. And everything was there, then forwarded to the minister, because the delegations for the filling of these positions lies with the minister. So I know that there were some questions that were raised by the minister about the lengthy process after that the department took after the closing date of these positions, and we did explain to the ministry that Chair, during these posts were advertised during the COVID period, and these adverts were not sent through the post office, but they were sent electronically, of which now it was a very lengthy process, and also considering the capacity challenges within the department. So we had to do each and every screening of the application that we received. Printing of the applications, and doing the screening for each application. And compiling the master list, that on its own, Chair, it took us very long to complete the process. And also considering the fact that the capacity during that period, it was not 100%, because the staff they were rotating during that period. Hence, then there were some some little delays in the finalization of the master list, and also considering that these were not only the positions that we were dealing with. There were quite a number of other vacancies that the department is busy with. And then there are also so currently where we are sitting with these positions, they were sent to the ministry. That was in June, after the completion of all the internal processes that the department was doing. They were sent to the ministry. Yes, they were sent in June, and now we are waiting for the minister to advise us on the next process that must take place, which is shortlisting. And then there are also two chief director posts that were advertised last year, they closed in July 2021. These positions, Chair, they were the shortlisting was done on the 4th of August 2022, and we now have done the submission or the memos to the ministry, also seeking authority to then proceed with the next phase, which is the interviewing process. And this, Chair, you'll understand that the delegations for these ones, it is within the Director General, but we the normal process that we used to do, we always, once we do the first phase, we'll then inform the minister to say we have done this phase and these are the people who were found to be suitable for the post, and then we then seek for the authority to proceed to the next phase. So we are currently now awaiting for the authority to then proceed to the next phase, which is the interviewing phase. And then we have chaired the post of a director legal services, which was advertised in April 2022, and the advert closed in May 22, and the shortlisting and the interviews were concluded on this post, Chair. However, after we have concluded with all the processes in August, the minister then issued a directive that they would want to be the ones who do the processes on the filling of these positions, since they felt that this is one of the strategic position which the minister would want to be hands on in doing and selecting the incumbent of this position. So we then submitted everything to the minister, but all the processes were finalized on this one. And then the last one, Chair, is the post of a director of finance, which was advertised in March 2021 and closed in April 2021. This one, Chair, unfortunately, the department could not finalize the process, because after we had started with the process, then there was a dispute. One of the employees lost a dispute, of which then the department we sent it for review through the state attorney. But the legal opinion which we were given by the advocate who was dealing with this position advised us not to proceed with the filling until this process is finalized. Then the next slide, Chair. Here I'm just giving you the reflection on the establishment and the gender per program. So you will notice that the first
may I request you up the pace a bit?
Okay. Okay, thank you. Then the first graph, it talks to the vacancies and as well as the it talks to the filled positions and as well as the vacancies. So but it's exactly what I presented in the previous slide. With regards to the vacancies, the numbers that I gave you, and then also the gender. This one, this series, the second graph, it talks to the gender, which series one it represents females, and series two represents males. You will then notice that under program one, we have got more females than males. And program two also we have got more females than males, and then program three we have got less females as compared to the males. And then the next slide, Chair, I'm giving you the environmental scan on the age analysis. Here, Chair, you will notice down there in the ages that are ranging between 55 and 59, which is your early retirement, that we currently have the high number of employees that are now qualifying for early retirement. And also, if you look at the next row here, which is row number the people that are aging between 60 and 64, and that is people that are now qualifying for your normal retirement. So currently, the department has got 8 people that are in those age groups. Then the next slide, Chair, it talks to the employment equity target versus the current status on at the SMS positions. So we have got here during the months of May, June, and July, the department was our target for the Africans. It was 78.9, but we met this target. We achieved the target by 100%, which means all our SMS members are Africans. So if you look at other race groups, which are your colors, your Indians and whites, you will notice that the department does not have any of these groups at the SMS levels, which means that during our recruitment processes, we will have to target those groups in order to meet our targets. And then in terms of the people living with disabilities, our target is 2%, and the department, we are currently sitting at 1.6%. But if you round off this number, you will get 2%, which means that we partially achieved this one as well, Chair. Then the next slide, it talks to the outcome of the analysis based on the economic active population, starting with the representation of women as at 31 July. So at senior management level, the department was sitting at 54.2%, which means that we did meet this target. We overachieved it by 4.2%. And then the representation of coloreds and Asians at SMS levels is currently zero, which means that we need to also focus in these areas during our next recruitment. Then at the middle management level, which is your level 9 to 12 chair, the department currently is sitting at 49.2%, which means we have not achieved this one by 0.8%, but that is not bad. And then the at junior management and lower levels, which are your levels 3 to 8, the department currently stands at 46.5%, which means we are just below with 3.5%. Then the representation of blacks, which then at senior management, the blacks then, which is your Africans, coloreds, and Indians, currently we're standing at 100%, because most of our, all of our SMS positions are Africans, which falls within this group. Okay, and then at middle management levels, also blacks, we currently sitting at 86.6%. So again, and then in relation to the target of 91.5, which also is not that bad, also check. And then I will then go to the retention strategy, Chair. Our retention strategy, Chair, the department currently conducts the exit interviews for all employees that are exiting the service. And there is a fully fledged committee that looks and analyze the reports that in terms of our exit questionnaires. And then all the issues of concerns that are raised during exit interviews are addressed with the relevant offices or line managers in order to cap the recurrence and of those incidents. And they are we then record all those incidents to the registers. Then the policy allows for the rotation of employees on the same levels in order to enhance the organizational effectiveness and multi-skilling of employees. And this is done in consultation with employees. So this means that, Chairperson, our policy also, it allows for to rotate the employees so that they can get exposure in all other areas within the organization. And some employees are assigned to act on the higher vacant positions that they qualify for, as directed by Section 32 of the Public Service Act, to give them more exposure. And also, Chairperson, for all our vacant positions, we do allow, we have appointed some of the employees, Chair, to act in those positions just for to give them also some managerial skills as well as leadership skills. And then here, Chair, in this table, I'm just giving you the sketch with regards to the employees that are on the bursary program, Chair, which is the total number is 28 of them. And there are 14 females as well as 14 males which are on the program. I've then given you as per salary level so that you can see that when we grant these bursaries, we also consider all categories so that we can employees can get the opportunity. Then the employees on the bursary program are bound to serve the service back obligations after the completion of their studies. This means that, Chair, once we grant you the bursary, then you sign the obligation to then serve back for a particular period within the department so that the return on investment can be realized from within the department. Okay, then the department's retention strategy, it allows to retain the skills of an employee who is offered a higher position in another public service or private sector. We also, Chair, do the counter offers for those employees who have been offered other positions from other institutions. So our policy, it also allows the department to then counter offer those employees so that we can be able to retain some of the skills from within. And the employees who have acquired improved qualifications are given opportunities to serve in their area of specialty. Okay, Chair, we also have those employees who upgrade themselves in terms of education, and they will then come back to the department and submit their improved qualifications, which are not in relation to the occupations. So we allow them to be placed in those in the areas that are relevant to the positions that they've acquired, just to give them exposure as well. Then this slide, Chair, it talks to the succession planning. The department has 48 contract employees, which are additional to the establishment. And then out of these 48 contract employees, 7 are at the managerial positions, which is IO level 9 to 12. And then the department, through its stakeholders and engagements, has resolved that the recruitment policy must allow for entry-level positions to be advertised internally, just to give a preference to the contract employees. So, Chair, during our bargaining council meetings, we have resolved that in order for the department to then reduce the number of these contracts, when advertising entry-level positions, they must be advertised internally so that we can be able to absorb all these contract workers within the permanent positions. And the other 7 senior contract employees, they are to be catered for in senior vacant positions, but provided that they are found to be suitably qualified for those positions. And also, Chair, the other 7 senior contract employees also, they will be catered for in some of the senior positions that will be filled in the department, but that will be dependent on the if should the recruitment panels find them to be suitably qualified for those positions. And then the current representation of employees in the age groups, it shows that the department has 8 employees between the ages of 60 and 65, which is your normal retirement, and the total number of 19 employees are between the ages of 55 and 59, which is your early retirement. So for these groups, then the department chair is conducting the pre-retirement workshops just to assess the state of readiness for these employees, so that just to ensure that when they go for their retirement, they will be ready and they will be having all the information that is relevant to them. So during these retirement workshops, Chair, we invite GEPF to give them information on their pensions. We invite SARS to also advise them on tax implications during their retirement, as well as GEMS for the medical aid. Then the employees, some of other employees are appointed to act on higher vacant positions at middle and senior management positions, just to prepare them for career pathing from within the organization. I think I did allude to this one, to this point, Chair, in my previous slide, to say that we also give opportunities. In fact, all our vacant positions at senior and middle management, we have appointed some employees to act in those positions, just so that we can prepare them to be able to contest for those positions when they are advertised, and also to give them the management and leadership skills. And then in terms of the mentoring and coaching, senior employees that are identified to be due for the retirement are partnered with their junior employees for a period that is not less than 12 months, just to ensure that the transferring of skills. So for these groups, Chair, that I mentioned that are within your early retirement and normal retirement, we also have ensured that we partner them with their co-workers, just to ensure that their skills are not lost, but so that to be transferred to the other employees that are still within the organization. That then takes me to the end of my presentation, Chair. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Mkonze. Colleagues, we can now indulge. But just before I ask the colleagues to, let me just check if I do have hands first. Okay, there are two hands. Okay. So it's Mr. Mare, Mr. Shelembe, and Mr. Mutle. But before I invite them to ask their questions, I have two questions to raise. One is a concern, sir, that every third person in the department is a contract employee. To be precise, is in excess of the establishment. It's a concern. Going to questions, the first question is, how long is the contract that they sign with the department? And linked to that one, what is the longest period to have been served by one of those employees? And then thirdly, you say that there's an obligation on the part of your bursary holders to serve in the department so that they return, so that you get the return on the investment. Don't you think that that perpetuates inequality in our society? That those who are fortunate become more fortunate. Fortunate in the sense that you were offered a bursary, which cannot be available to most people. You are handpicked, given a bursary, and in addition, the department obligates itself to you to find you an employment, to find you a job. We have people out there whose parents struggled to raise money to educate them, to take them to tertiary, and post tertiary after they have qualified and they've received degrees, they stay at home because there is no employment. They were not assisted by the state in the first place. Parents pay from their pocket. And two, now they are sitting at home, can't find employment because there's just no job. But on this side, it's state-sponsored, states obligate itself to find him or her a job, so that he is able to, bring to pay back, as it were, inverted commas. But it's not pay. It's not pay back. You have found her a job, something many people out there struggling to find. So I will leave it at that for now, and then recognize Mr. Mare, Mr. Shelembe, and Mr. Mutle in that order. I start with you, Mr. Mare.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. Much appreciated. I want to start off by where the chairperson has left off. He has certainly put some of my concerns, and he has certainly read my mind in that regard. The practical reality is that currently we are 9 overstrength. 9 overstrength with that 48 contracts. And if you look at slide number 7, where the process of filling vacancy is, can you give us an indication which of those posts, the vacancies, is earmarked or at least will be utilized to correct that whole process of, first of all, contracts, and then also obviously of equity distribution and the whole transformation targets that you should have in terms of that. So how many of that will be utilized and is earmarked for that? Then also on the contracts that the chairperson has referred to, can you give us an indication, obviously in terms of when those contracts will be terminated, in other words, their end date, and how will that overlap with those filling of posts, and what will the effect be on the budget? Because clearly, if you're on, you're already 9 overstrength, and if some of the new filling of posts will coincide with a contract period, it means that you will run well over your allocated posts in the department, and that means spent in excess of your allowable budget. So if you can address that. Also, in terms of still on that slide 6, we have constantly, nearly every meeting, that there are not capacity and there are not enough people. with an overstrength at this stage, why do the departments still struggle to catch up with the demand for services of military veterans? And that's from the database registration to the consideration of applications for this different benefits. We hear that every day, we hear that every meeting. So why are they struggling? And how will these new appointments, you know, address that specific issue? Then I also want to know equipment. What is the situation with the required equipment? Because if you have got people, but you do not have the right equipment, then obviously what do? They will sit and play with their phones and be on social media. So what is the situation for in terms of equipment for people to provide the services to military veterans? Then on slide 10, it seems like, and that obviously links to my previous ones, in terms of this, there is absolutely zero transformation in terms of other your targets and also other age groups. So how are you addressing that, and what is the kind of time frames that you can give us so that we can measure you against that? Because obviously, you know, the situation is not acceptable. And what you must also consider is the target market in terms of needs. And I'm saying that not in the interest of white people, but in the interest of colored people. We experience right through the year, probably the most inquiries that I deal with, and I'm sure the other members as well, are old colored, so-called colored members who are registered on the database, or who has not even been on the database up till now. On slide 12, a bit of a concern of your representation of people with disabilities. Tell me, how do you justify saying the department achieved government targets? You have 1.6% and the target is 2%. So how on earth can you be, and my apologies if this sounds very harsh, so arrogant against people with disabilities? When your target is 2%, your achievement is 1.6%, you say, I tap myself on the shoulder, I've done very well, I've achieved. How the hell is 1.6% achievement in terms of a 2% target? Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you, Mr. Selembe.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I think, that presentation, I must appreciate, the way it has been presented to us. As chapters, we know that, for any organization, one must agree that, the enough staff is like the lifeblood, of the organization. I'm concerned about, the issue of the delays in finishing the cases that has been mentioned. I don't want, to put a pressure, but I just, the question, why, the causes of these delays, are they related to lack of evidence that the department have, or they are just maybe the technical delays by those employees being charged? Say, for instance, the issue of, the sick note, this, that, I heard about the sick note, that when it comes to department policy, an employee charge comes, say, maybe their medical certificate or something. What is the department doing to, avoid that? Chair, it's worrying us as the oversight committee. I think it's also worrying the department of the ministry. The DM is here. And now it's more than 10 years. We asked still talking about the challenges that we can't, roll out the benefits to the military veterans because of the vacancies that are being mentioned as one of the challenges in the department. Because now they can't fill the position, whereas on the other side, there are some people who are getting paid for more than 2 years or 3 years because of the pending cases. Coming to the issue of the delays in filling the vacancies, it seems the process of, appointing the staff in the DMV is very, very, frustrating. I heard that, they have to advertise to the ministry for shortlisting, then it must be brought back, to the department. Then again, after shortlisting, you must send it back to the department and then come back for interview. Then go back now to get the concurrence of the people to be employed. I'm checking now, why the process is so long. Isn't better that maybe if let's say one department must take the responsibility to employ rather than going up and down, and it is delaying at the rolling out of the beneficiaries. I think maybe I'll get the clarity because I'm not convinced that the issue of up and down with the shortlisting interviews, concurrence of appointment, that stuff. And then, Chair, I must appreciate, the retention strategy. It is good. I really appreciate it. But Chairperson, my question is, I think you have asked the question, maybe it may be similar about, the duration of the service back as an obligation to those people who have been able to get, the bursaries. But my question say now, if say an employee, bleach or, do not,
we've lost him, Thabo. Please, can you
audible?
No, I think your line is breaking terribly. Can you sort it out and then come back later? Hello? Go ahead.
Okay. No, Chairperson, the last question is the one that you said you advised me to come here to the DM to believe in rumors, but one of the veteran has asked me to confirm if it is true that by December military veterans will be getting paid. So I don't want to create anything related that military veterans will be getting their pension in December. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Thabo Motle.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll try to be quick in terms of raising the question there about Ray. Good afternoon to everybody. One, Chair, on their slide 9, the picture there depicts the imbalance in terms of the age groups, which clearly says that at the entry level or those less than 29 years, they are about to, insofar as that slide is concerned. Whilst you've got over 20, if not mistaken, or 19, that are at an exit level. So how are they going to strike a balance with that picture? Two, you spoke to it, Chair, on the 48 employees that are on contract with the department. Can they share with us their plan as to how they are going to implement it in terms of ensuring that they retain those employees or absorb them? I'm saying this, Chair, because when they are within the department, and probably as and when they respond to your question as to how long have they kept them on contract, that will align it to my question to say any investment that they have done on those contracts, when they advertise, are they going external as opposed to internal? Is there a skill that they are looking for outside that the 48 that they have on contract do not have? Because seated where I'm seated, probably my logically, I think if they've got those in contract and there's a plan to absorb them because the department or the institution has already developed them and invested in them, you would advertise internally. And only go external when there are certain skills that those 48 do not have in place. What is their strategy in terms of that, and how is that impacting on the morale of those that are on contract, or is their human capital in general? If they can just give us the status or the picture in terms of the morale of those personnel. Lastly, Chair, the presenter made mention of the role of minister, which I found very disturbing or controversial. Maybe we need to look at the role of the minister in terms of those SMS posts, because even where the minister has got delegated powers, the administrative part of recruitment still remains with the HR, and they must run that process and be able to report to the minister accordingly, as opposed to what has been reported here that the minister would want to take control of even those processes. I think it's incorrect, and it's quite unfortunate that it has been presented as such. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now is the opportunity for the department to respond. Once again, I remind you to set your video camera on, unless if it interferes with your connectivity. Right, DG?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you to Minister in Absentia and Deputy Minister and the members. We would be responding jointly on the matters that have been raised. Indeed, Chairperson, greetings once more. The camera does interfere with our systems and our network is very bad on our side. We usually keep it off in order to ensure we're able to finish the meeting without any disruptions. We would like to apologize because of the unstable network, and we'll continue to ensure that when we speak, we just have a few minutes to pause the camera and then switch it off. Thank you, Chairperson, with your permission and the members' permission.
Welcome.
I think, Chairperson, we are presenting this HR plan, or maybe let me not say HR plan, departmental challenges in relation to our organogram and our mandate. Our mandate, indeed, Chairperson, and the members have raised it quite sharply, is to focus on service delivery to the military veterans. And we are trying to reposition ourselves to that, and also reposition the necessary capacity to that, and also reposition the departments, and to also ensure that we have the necessary skills and ensure that we have the necessary staff. I'm trying to respond to the last member that has raised some of the issues in terms of how we are going to be ensuring that some of these positions that have been advertised are taken care of. Indeed, Chairperson, there are delegations which are drafted by the DPSA and given to the minister of each and every department, and the minister will delegate the accounting officer in terms of the levels of appointments. We also subscribe to that process, and currently we have done the requests that have been made to the department, especially on the posts that have been advertised, to give an opportunity to the ministry to comment. But having said that, Chairperson, the DMV's challenge, biggest challenge, is in the area of capacity. And if we are talking to the area of capacity, Chairperson, it has actually put back most of our service delivery issues that we want to ensure that there's efficiency, a seamless services to our military veterans. Chairperson, in relation to that, we are trying to also ensure that with service delivery mandate that we're having, we must be able to have these people that are crucial, especially in CES, who are going to be posed with a serious pressure because of the rolling out of the pension. We are already under pressure with capacity there. I felt that the member that has spoken last, it's important that we note what he has said in relation to the pressures that we're going to be facing as we are rolling the CES. What is that we're going to do? We are also going to engage with DPSA to see what is short-term, medium-term, and long-term issues that we can be able to raise with them in the light of the organogram that is being developed for the department. That is the area on the last past that the member was raising. In relationship, Chairperson, to issues of the contract workers and how we are going to ensure we create a balance and equity and address the issues of not jeopardizing other people that are currently not in the department. When the positions are available, we do advertise them to ensure that there's a fair process in terms of recruitment. Therefore, it allows also some of the other people that were not involved within the contract process to participate so that we can be able to ensure that there's openness and there's competitiveness, a fair competition, of course. Then I'm just going to leave the other areas for my colleagues to take up, Chairperson, but I just felt that what the member has raised, we need to sharply note it in the light of the pressure that we're going to have in rolling out the CES, but also another section that is going to be posed with pressure is a section around beneficiary support services. It's a section that is going to be dealing with the database verification. We are also going to be having to raise our red flags there as we are rolling the pension, as the majority of our military veterans are actually struggling in this area. And it's another area that is going to have pressure of need in terms of the staff complement. And we're mindful of that, and we are going to be also repositioning ourselves to ensure that there's a seamless service in that area. And the last area, Chairperson, now that the member has raised these things, I also want to mention that the appeals board is also going to be under tremendous pressure, because as soon as the members are applying for the pension and then there's challenges maybe with rejection, that advisory board, not advisory board, my apologies, the appeals board will also be under pressure, and we are noticing and looking at how we are going to be dealing with the pressure in those three areas. It's a database, which we call it beneficiary support, and then CESS, where most of our benefits are coming out. Those are the three areas that are going to be having pressure while we are rolling the pension. I would like to give to Makonza to get into the other details, and Mr. Siango also can touch on the other ones. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the members, Minister and Deputy Minister.
Thank you, ma'am. The first question that was asking as to
you also have a challenge with your connectivity.
Yes, sure. We are within the same building, and our network is giving us challenges, sure.
Okay.
With the duration of our contract, the question was asking how long is our contract. The contract are on an annual basis, so we renew them every year. And I think I did explain when I was presenting that this has been ongoing since from 2014. And Chair, the majority of these employees, those that are on the lower levels, which are operational. So, seeing the capacity challenges in the department, the department will not be able to function without these employees. And also, it will not be possible for the department, even if we were to terminate them, because legally we have created a legitimate expectation by renewing this contract for more than a year. So hence we are then now trying to absorb them into the permanent positions. And then the also a question regarding the bursary obligation. I'm not sure that I understood you correctly on this one, Chair, but these bursaries, Chair, are for the employees. They are not for unemployed. So all government departments that has got this program, they will be service back obligation that each employee must enter into, so that the department also can realize that return on investment. Because also the intention of giving the staff bursaries, it is also to improve the services within the department or the standards, because we also have some employees that were employed with the metric certificates only. So we prioritize our bursary policy gives priority to those employees so that they can be able to acquire formal qualifications. There was a question that was asking about how many of the positions are earmarked to address the contracts. Okay, Currently, Chair, we have got 10 entry-level positions that we advertised internally, of which we are in the process of recruiting for those positions. So the target group for those positions is then within this these contract employees. Then once we finish that group, we'll then proceed at and also advertise other vacancies. And then there was a question also in the attraction of other race groups. Okay, Chair, when we remember, Chair, the vacant positions that are advertised internally are only the entry level positions, but those that the senior positions are advertised externally. So with those, then you will see our advert. It will have a section at the end that will be specific to say that people from these race groups, which is your colors, your Indians and your whites, are encouraged to apply. So by then, we are trying to attract these groups so that we can balance our employment equity. There was also a question regarding the people living with disabilities as to why are we saying that we are meeting the target when and how are we going to then whereas we are not meeting the target of 2%. I said, Chair, during my presentation, we are sitting at 1.6%, which when you round it off, it will give you 2%. However, then I also mentioned that so that means that we have partially achieved this target, not that we have fully achieved, but we have partially achieved this target. And what we have done with some of the adverts also that we are doing externally, we also send copies of the adverts to the disability agencies, like your blind societies, so as to attract also some of the people that are living with disabilities. And then there was a concern that was raised regarding the delays on our cases, especially with the submissions of the signals. On these ones, Chair, we don't have much control of it, but it is the chairpersons of the cases that are conducting and making decisions on this. But we do consultations, because once there are preliminary issues that are raised in on these cases, the initiators, they will come to us and present those prelim, and then they advise us about the legal implications, if then maybe they can object to that. So we have always been mindful of it. The only thing that we have emphasized to the people that are or the people that are assisting the department in the cases is that all these cases, they must be finalized by the end of the financial year. So I think then that we must start to worry if then that target is not met. But currently, I would say that maybe let us not worry a lot, because also these cases, they've not delayed that much. It's only almost a year, of which because also the investigations, they were concluded in March. So but from where I am sitting, I can confirm that there is a good progress when it comes to these cases. And then the lengthy processes on our recruitment process, I don't think that maybe I can say much on this one because but I think our principals are the ones who will make decisions, because from our side, what we do, we were directed that each and every process that we do, we have to inform them and then get authority to proceed to the next phase. But we will also try and improve on this one. And also the COVID period, I think it had some impact on also it added some delays on our recruitment processes. Then there was a question about also the imbalances on our age groups, as to how are we going to strike the balance. Chair, on these ones, since we have these groups that are due for retirement, so obviously the target will be to also get the people that are still are young, with the good skills and qualifications, so that we can. And also we do have the employment equity plan, which always is guides our panels, our recruitment panels during the time of when they do recruitment. So that plan then is the one that will be able to address all these the imbalances that we have. But I can assure you that within the space of a year, there will be a change. When I come back and present the report to this committee, you will see some difference. I think I've addressed most of the questions. I was unable to capture the last one because the speaker was breaking, so I could not capture that one, Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Makwanza, I think it might have been in relation to the skills, and the member also spoke about the demands. I was also struggling to pick up, but I think it is an important insight that we need to look into, especially when the department will be going under review, to say for this department, which falls under the service delivery department, what kinds of skills do we need, and we can be able to match our service delivery targets that we have to do. We do fall, Chairperson, in the social cluster, and then when we are recruiting, we will be, of course, looking at the skills related to the social cluster, because we are one of the departments that is also responsible for service delivering services to the communities out there. Now, when, of course, the private sector will be looking at the economic type of skills. We do also sometimes have an issue with our constituency, because they would come and say some of our people are young and they don't have the understanding of where they come from. And then we do have to take into consideration when we are recruiting skills, knowledge, also the understanding of the community that we are serving. And of course, we have to make sure that attitude is also important with the people that we are serving. So in this sector, which includes us as a DMV in the social sector, we do have to take extra consideration when we do recruitment, and we don't focus only the skills, but look at the other areas that a person must have to be able to work with this community. Now, the age, again, we also have to look at maturity, and some form of understanding of the history of the department, and basically to ensure that people who come and work here have the necessary attitude and the necessary patience, of course, when time of pressure comes and we're able to deal with our military veterans and support them. I'm not sure what the member was trying to present to us, but I think it is an important area that we need to be mindful as a department and ensure that we are able to even train the current staff to be able to work with our military veterans and provide the necessary services. I thank you, Chairperson, Minister Absentia, and Deputy Minister, and the members. If we have lost some of the questions, it might have been due to the network. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm not too sure if Thabo Motlewa's question was addressed on the delay in filling the positions that have were advertised. I think the question is wanted to understand the role of the minister in relation to that that one. Can you bring back slide number 7, because his question is relevant to slide number 7. Slide number 7. Yes, it's relevant in relation to this slide. So what in actual fact you are waiting for, DG, I want you to confirm that. What in actual fact you are waiting for is for the minister to appoint the screening, shortlisting, and interviewing panel. If the minister it's happy with the work that you have done so far. If the minister is not happy, maybe because the process has taken too long before it got to this point, then the minister must make it a determination that the post must be re-advertised. Is that what you are waiting for? In other words, a decision one that appoints the panel to screen, shortlist, and interview. It may be two panels, one shortlist, and the other interviewing, or one panel for all three. And then all the decision that says restart the process, start de novo. Is that what you are waiting for?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, indeed, amongst other things, is an indication and a direction to say we should continue with the process and we provide the necessary support to the ministry, especially on the positions that are delegated to their level, or therefore we need them to look and say we need to re-advertise. Exactly, Chairperson, that's the direction that we're looking for. In the areas where the delegations are for accounting
No. Let's speak to this. All of these positions, in fact, positions that have not been delegated are level 14 chief director to level 15, including level 16. Any position below level 13 is delegated. Is that correct?
Indeed, Chairperson, that's correct.
Can you repeat which position are delegated to you? Which level?
It is level, it's from level 14 downwards, Chairperson. It's quite correct.
Can you repeat that so that I'm clear what you are saying? Get some mixed messages. Which positions are delegated to you?
It's 11.
Can I come in, Chair?
Yes, sir.
It's 11.
Can I come in, Chair?
Yes, please come in. Human resources?
Yes, sir.
Yes, you sit with the delegations, and after that, the DG must confirm what you are saying.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Chair, the levels that are delegated to the DG is level 14 downwards.
Okay, from the position of chief director.
And, yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. Sir.
Now let's look at level 14 downwards. What do we expect the minister to say?
Okay.
What answer do you expect from the minister?
Okay. What happens, Chair, for all SMS positions, which means from level it's level 13 and 14, which is delegated to the Director General. Once the post is vacant, we will write to the minister requesting to say that this post is vacant, and send this is the advert. It will be advertised, and then we attach the advert and send it to the minister, seeking for the concurrence of the minister. And then the minister will then reply to say, yes, it's okay, you can proceed. Then once it has been advertised again, there will be another, once it closes and there are applications, there will be another submission to the minister, informing the minister that the post closed on that particular date, and these number of applications were received, and then seeking for the concurrence of the minister to now proceed with the shortlisting, and the master list is then attached to that memo. Then the minister will reply and say, okay, fine, you can proceed with the shortlisting. Then the shortlisting then is conducted, and once this shortlisting is finalized, then there will be
who does the shortlisting and the screening?
It's the DG and the panel that is appointed by the DG.
Okay, in other words, it's a DG together with the panel.
Yes.
Appointed
yes,
by the DG. Okay, continue.
Yes, yes, sir. Then after the shortlisting, then there will be another submission that will be sent to the minister again, telling the minister that the shortlisting was concluded, and these are the number of employees that were found to be suitable. Then seeking the concurrence of the minister to now proceed to the next phase of doing the interviews. Then the minister will then sign and agree to say the committee can proceed to do the interviews. So that is the process for all SMS level positions, Chair.
Except those that are not delegated, level 15.
15. Yes, Chair. Yes, Chair.
Because level 15 must involve, cabinet
yes,
appointees, cabinet members sitting to interview, and in other words, to do. Can you deal with post level 15?
Yeah, post level 15. The advert will be done based on the PSA guidelines, and then once the minister will approve the advert, and then it is sent to DPSA. Once we receive the applications, then we we do the pre-screening. The pre-screening, Chair, is just to make the work of the minister easy, to say we just do the spreadsheet of all the applications that were received, and then their qualifications, everything. If there are any missing documents, we indicate just for them, so that when they do the shortlisting, it will be easy for them. They will be knowing what to check and where to check. So then, but we don't do anything, and then we forward everything to the minister. All the applications are sent to the minister together with the master list. You are not audible, Chair. I cannot hear you.
But the interviews here will be done by a panel of ministers, chaired by the minister of the department.
Yes, Chair.
That's the position. All right.
Yes.
Okay. Now we understand what you are really waiting for. From what we are waiting for, what has been the feedback from the minister on all these positions? The first two and the last three, minus the legal services, because maybe we have dealt with the legal services and you have dealt with the financial management. Maybe the first two and the second two.
Okay, the first two, Chair, we finalized, we did the master list, and we then sent everything to the minister. It was sent on the 3rd signed in July, and then it went to the minister. The minister signed in 28 September. It went from the DG via the deputy minister. The deputy minister signed on the 4th of August, and there were some comments that were made by the deputy minister, and also there were comments that were made by the minister. The comments, they were asking as to why the process took so long after the closing date. But the deputy minister requested that the process must be expedited. However, he also raised a concern about the delay after the closing date as to why, what made the process to take long after the closing date. But what complicated it, Chair, is that the comments that were made by the minister here, she also raised a question as to, are these posts not the ones that for the people that are suspended? But then when she raised all these questions, she did not approve, because she was supposed to approve and then advise us as to when must we come to then assist her in terms of now doing the shortlisting. But now she did not approve. So she wanted us.
What do you mean that she did not approve?
She stretched out the approval part to say we first need to deal with the questions that she raised. So the department had to answer the questions that were raised by the minister.
Has the department answered those questions?
Then the department answered the questions, Chair. The questions were answered to the minister and on the 11th of October, 2022. All the questions that were raised, we answered them, and we sent the memo to the minister with all
that was in October.
Yes, Chair.
and you have not received feedback,
then the minister received the memo. There is a stamp at the minister, which was signed on the in November, on the 4th of November, to confirm the receipt of this. And then, but then there was nothing. The minister did not sign, did not do anything. There's only a stamp that is confirming that the memo was received.
Okay, so that's how the whole thing ends. Let's deal with the next two. The second set.
The next two chairs.
Sorry, must I assume that the discussion that we have just concluded is in relation to the first two?
Yes, sir.
Or both of them?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's go to the next two positions.
The next two positions, chair, the shortlisting were done in August, and then after the shortlistings were done, then we did the memo to the minister to advise the minister that we have done this process. But after we have just done that, then I received a message that now these positions also of a chief director, the minister they would want also them to be conducted or to be done within their office. So then we could not proceed together with the one for the director legal, because also the director legal, it was shortlistings and interviews were concluded. But then after that also there was a notification which came, which was then saying that also these ones, the minister would want them to be also brought in into the ministry, so that the process can be dealt with within the ministry.
So how do you understand the minister's directive in the context of the delegation that speaks to these levels, level 14? You've just explained that level 14 are delegated. From level 14, there is delegation to the DG.
Yes, sir. You are correct. But it's been a procedure that the DG cannot, although she does have the delegations, but she will always consult with especially with all SMS positions. She will always consult with the ministry.
The directive you've just spoken about is signed off by the minister. It's not from some other staff who was purporting to be speaking on behalf of the minister. That these positions, the two chief director position and that one legal, must be processed within the ministry. Is it from the minister signed off by her, or it's from some other member of staff?
I will then request the DG to address that one.
DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The minister, in relation to these positions, she voiced it herself that she would like to make some input.
No. I'm actually asking, the submission was in writing, and have you received feedback in writing? In other words, feedback to the submission. Obviously, it will be in writing. That's a question I'm asking. Or is the directive that was issued verbally outside the written submission?
It was issued verbally, Chairperson. It was not written within the submission, Chairperson.
And what happened to the submission?
Every documentation in relation to these positions are still within the office of the minister, Chairperson.
Okay. No. Thank you very much. We wanted first not to be clear so that we don't assume anything. Colleagues, I'm sorry that I had to do this. It's just that it's a matter that has been occupying us because it's at the center of the performance of the department. All right, colleagues, I think we'd want to leave it at that for now. Maybe the DM would just do comments. DM, I'll limit you because we have one item to deal with and the time now is 10 to 1. So we must finish at 1. DM?
Chair, yeah, you do have a challenge on your hands, obviously. No, Chair, I was going to say that as you were saying that the operational details that we drilled down into in this discussion were necessary, but in the normal course of business, indeed, they do not belong here. it's something which officials, the ministry should be very clear about in terms of what the guidelines say of how administrative work is done. I just want to make one point in relation to these appointments to the members, which is that the reason why there is there are cliches now and again over these matters, it is because there isn't the expected practice in relation to how the department brings in new employees into the organization in keeping with the regulations. Members will take note and have, I would imagine, taken note of the fact that the employees appointed into the department from the level of director upwards, meaning employees employed into the SMS levels, senior management services level. That responsibility of appointing managers of any department from director upwards is the responsibility of the executive, but the executive delegates it as a matter of convention to the accounting officer. What are the implications? What does that mean? All it means is that for any post from director upwards has to be filled with the awareness and concurrence of the minister. And it starts with how that is realized. It starts with the process, as it was indicated, of advertising the posts. That memos starts being generated at that stage to provide information and visibility of the steps that the DG is taking to appointing a new manager, whether it's a director, chief director, DDG. And of course, when it comes to DG, DDG, the panel is constituted by the minister herself. Now, of course, it appears very, you know, bureaucratic, but it is not as bureaucratic as it is made to appear. There are only three critical steps where the ministry has to be cited about this process. The first one is the post to say, here a vacancy has occurred, the post is of this nature, and the job description, the content of that post be shared with the ministry, and the advertising dates be indicated.
And that there is funding for it.
And there is, of course, there is funding for it. That is the first stage. And from there, the department runs the process, goes out, it advertises, and it shortlists. After it has shortlisted, the department comes back to say to the minister, this is the long list of the people that had applied for this post. This is a short list of people we think are appointable. And we are proposing, that is the teaching, I am proposing that the following names of people should constitute the panel that must process these candidates. And the minister must say, yes, I agree with the people you are recommending to constitute the panel, and they proceed from there. The next stage, that is the third stage, is when the DG comes back and says, interviews have been held. Here is the record. Here is the forensic of how we picked up the appropriate candidate.
The report of the interviews with the scores.
That exactly. The report of the interviews comes in. The scores of the panelists have the scores. And that is the usefulness of actually having that last stage also be made visible to the executive authority to say the interviews were conducted and this is how the candidates have performed and this is how they were scored by the different panelists. And you can see the patterns of the scoring, if there was collusion or not. But also there must be all the results of the competency test as another component that must be added. All that forensic, the ministry will go through it and satisfy itself that no, this was done according by the book. And the minister would say, your recommended candidate, DG, which you have signed on, I confirm, I agree. And then we proceed. That is what happens. It is not a difficult matter. But in a situation, of course, where we are not all at the same wavelength, where the department advertises, shortlists, interviews, and you see a director sitting in a meeting, we don't know who the director is, how he was appointed, and stuff like that. Then it creates these kind of, unnecessary glitches. The minister cannot say, I'm saying this, hopefully not with a chance of being contradicted. The minister's office does not have the capacity to take over the process of filling any post. It does not have those people to do that.
DM, we're not discussing, we wanted to understand the process,
yes.
Not trying to be operational. Let's leave it at that level. You have explained it.
Thank you.
In fact, the way you've explained it is the way I understand it. It doesn't differ much from what the DG has presented, except insofar as that there is now this thing that I'm going to deal with this thing within my own office. The minister saying, no, leave this post with me here. I'll process them myself. That's where it changes slightly. So it's for information. We don't want to debate it. And we put it on record, and then you can deal with it at some other time as both the ministry and the department.
Okay.
I'm trying to make you understand that it was just about process.
Yes.
I wanted to understand.
No. Agreed, Chair and honorable members. Agreed. That, I think, it's clear. The comments made by the DG are very appropriate. The DG made a statement to the effect that the issue we have is the capacity. The biggest problem is the capacity of the DMV. and the capacity of DMV arises traditionally because or out of the limited compensation of employees' budget, the entire budget of DMV affords this department, and as a result, the warm bodies the department can work with. So the department does not have sufficient warm bodies to deliver on its mandate. That is very true. This, however, has been exacerbated by two weaknesses in the department. One, the poor rate of addressing vacant posts. And the evidence is there for you to see. This is aggravating the capacity of the department that DG is complaining about. But secondly, unfortunately, the suspensions that have happened in the department are at a critical level. They are all senior ministers. To the extent that we have gone for a whole year without a department having a DDG. Is the DG, no DDGs in the department at all. Chief directors, we have two chief directors who are in very critical roles out, including the CFO. So the suspensions, the presentation on what the process is when employees are being disciplined, that those procedures are very important. And the issue here is that the Department of Military Veterans must comply. The department must comply with these guidelines on how consequence management gets effected, right, starting from when allegations are made, a report being received on the allegations against any member, right up to when a decision that is corrective is taken. The department must adhere to the principles and the guidelines that were shared with the oversight committee. And unfortunately, there are discrepancies, and the discrepancies do unavoidably lead to prolonged periods of times where you have people suspended, staying at home, receiving wages without them doing any, providing any service to the department. As the situation stands now, we will be going for the second year now, or not going for the second year. We are in the second year of those suspensions of officials who are sitting at home, receiving payments without salaries, without doing any work. And it is because the very same process steps that we're talking about, we did not adhere to them properly as expected. And of course, the other strategic challenge that the DG has raised is that of the organization of the department. And he has made the point that they'll be approaching GPSA, the Public Service and Administration Department. They need to do that. The department needs to do that. And the only time they will be able to do so is when the redesign of the organizational structure of the department has been done, that they can now present it for approval by GPSA. And of course, endorsement by treasurer that that kind of organization is what government can sustain. It is critical that that be done, and it is one of the key performance areas that we need to get delivered by our department's management. The last one around verification, indeed, that the DG has raised. Verification is important, but the reason why there's pressure around verification, which we have done impressively well, by the way, honorable members, since the PTT was established, because the PTT is the one that took the decision to reconstitute a verification panel And that verification panel has been hard at work for months until, of course, July, when they suspended the activities, not out of any fault of their own, but because of the logistics challenges within the department. And that situation still remains, even as we speak, they said. The verification is not going on, but it is not the problem or the responsibility of the panelists themselves. It is the department which is having its own challenges that have led to the collapse of logistics support to that work. But that logistics support, the collapse of that logistics support is unavoidably creating political pressure that the DG is talking about. So everything is around administrative ability for us to get the department to be a better department. That's what I would say, Chair, and leave matters there in the interest of time to share my sentiments with the committee I submit.
Thank you very much, DM, for your presentation. Let me now thank the department for their presentation this morning, and wish them well as they undertake the task that lies ahead of them. The budget has been increased. I heard from the through the grapevines, from the baseline of 600 million rand to about a billion rand next year. I hope that is correct, and that if the money, if the department fails to spend the money again, come September next year, in that financial year, the money will be revised down from 1 billion rand by that much that the treasury will take away from the department. But if the department projects that it will spend every single cent allocated to it, it will retain 100% of its allocation until the end of the financial year. I'm talking about 2023-24 financial year. That's where they will receive this increased budget. To me, it's a commitment on the part of this government towards assisting the plight, in the plight of the military veterans. The president, the cabinet, they are pledging so much resources to be made available to address the plight of the military veterans, especially those that are living in dire situation. Their situation has not been resolved. It's not the function of resources, because resources were made available and the department could not spend them, leading to the money surrendered or the budget surrendered back to the treasury and the budget reduced in view of under expenditure in the department. So your job, DG, is cut out, and please pull all the stops, and the fellows out there, the military veterans in the Mbizos that you had throughout the country, you met them, and you see, they need us to restore their dignity. It's time that we do that. On that note, I wish to thank all colleagues for their contribution today. I'm sorry we cannot deal with the last item on the agenda. It was minutes. We will defer them to the next meeting, probably early in the new year. We still have to approve the program for the new year, for the first term. I want us to deal with it on Friday. Brian, you'll be at the J. John Standing Committee on Defense. I would ask that we be given a 30-minute slot to approve that the committee meets on as a committee to approve its own first term program, so that we end the year with the term program finalized. Is that agreeable, colleagues?
No problem.
Thank you so much. With that, I thank all of you for your participation. Thank you very much, DM, and all the members from the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks to the members, and thanks to the Deputy Minister and Minister in absentia.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the committee members. Thank you.
Recording stopped.